Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 16th of July. We're halfway through this month and head to July, August. July, August.
Yep. At the end of this month is my vacation.
What is that?
Vacation, going to South Africa.
Oh, it sounds like some Jewish thing.
Yeah, it's a vacation to South Africa.
Vacation.
it's a Yiddish word for
vacation. I got my vacation.
Yeah, and of course there's been some flare-ups and protests and demonstrations and some kind of street riots in some of the places that we're going, so they're going to have to cancel and divert us.
Where are you going that they have street riots?
I guess in Cape Town, in the area of Cape Town, there's something going on there.
Oh, huh. It's a pretty mild area.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
But we'll go and endeavor on and see how that flows and how that flies, and should be interesting. Well, there's a lot of things to talk about. I have some really interesting things that are, I think pretty fascinating. Because we have earnings season that's now officially underway. And we have the promises from the G20 and the China. Remember the U.S. China G20 meeting with the handshake. And things are going to be back in line. And things are going to be great.
Yeah.
And already promises are being broken.
Like what promises?
Well, do you remember when I had two things? One was if they came out with the word framework, that would be a big, uh-oh, what's going on? The second one, which I didn't really mention, was if they talked about buying record amounts or lots of agricultural products from the United States, I was going to be worried. That was the second part. And of course, they did. They, you know, we're back on track. We're talking. We're going to do this. And also, as an added bonus, they're going to be buying lots of agricultural products. Meanwhile, if you look at the agricultural product data and you get the farmers' information, there has been no increase or change in agricultural buying. And China already said they're not going to be doing it. And President Trump agreed that, yes, they're not buying our products. He's very let down.
Oh.
So much for the
we were someone was scammed.
Either someone was scammed or we were scammed, which I think is more probable. And so here we are back where we were, where there's actually nothing happening there. So just crazy. Markets were hitting some highs until today, came down ever so slightly, and we see some interesting economic numbers that I would consider at best mixed, but generally still looking solid in the U.S. Around the world, misery.
Yeah.
Just simple misery. So what else do we got? I thought I would bring this to you because all my, this is a Jewish word, kvetching and complaining about all these customer service issues I recently had. I have the mother load between my road podcast.
Apple.
I have the
and
Apple.
The road.
Right. The road, which I've been going back and forth, and there's like, they're like, well, that's how it works. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's no good.
Right. Well, they said it's probably Adobe Audition, so contact Adobe. I contacted Adobe today. They did a screen share with me. They're like, no, that's Windows. Windows with these drivers does take full control. So I go back to a road and I tell them that's what they said. They're like, well, that's no good. Why don't you try another recording system? You know, another, like, I don't know, Audacity or something. I'm like, I don't want to. I like Audition. Works really well. I got a subscription to it. I'm paying for it. I like it.
They suggested Audacity, a free program?
They just suggested switching to another program.
Okay.
So first of all, just a quick refresher on the Apple MacBook Pro, where I noticed that one day it was starting to get warped and
swollen.
It was swolled. And I put it down on the desk and it would like rock back and forth. So I went to the store and they said, well, if you leave it, it's $199 and we'll replace the battery. And if it is our fault, we'll replace the case and all this. And I said, I can't leave it right now. This is before I set up this new Windows machine in the studio. So I had to use it. They said, well, you could send.
I thought the MacBooks were made out of solid aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, they make a block of aluminum. They grind out the guts of it, and then they put this stuff inside. How does a solid piece of aluminum It's not pressed or it's not forged. But how does a block of aluminum start to bulge?
It must have been a heavy amount of pressure from the battery.
Very strange.
You got to wonder how the motherboard and any other parts didn't get all deranged as well.
It's a miracle it worked.
Right. So they said you could send it back to Apple Care. You have to pay $20 for shipping, and then they'll do it at $199. I called up Apple Care. They wanted to charge me like $500 or $600 because of this. And I said, no, the store said it's $199. I went back and forth. He overwrote it, $199. I send it to Apple Care. I get a call or an email. Hey, it's going to be $750 because there's water damage. I said, what kind of water damage? There's no water damage. It hasn't been out of my office. So they said, well, you have to then say that you don't want it fixed because I'm not paying the $750. So I clicked the button. I said, don't fix it. Send it back to me. I get an email. Okay, it's coming back to you. I get it back the day after. It sits in my office because I'm so upset by this Mac. It's in the box. I won't open the box. Well, tomorrow I'm going to a conference and I want to have that computer with me. So I decided tonight, at about an hour ago, I'm going to open this thing up. I'll figure out if it's still swollen. I can still use it. It's fine. I open it up. I put it on my desk, flat as a pancake. I'm like, I take out the service order and the receipt from the box. It says that we replaced the upper case and your battery. There are no charges. So they didn't even charge me the $199. Fixed. I checked the battery. It only had one cycle on it. It's a brand new battery. The whole keyboard, the whole area was fixed. And the underlying aluminum was clearly not fixed because I have a sticker on the back and it was still there. So it's the same one, but it all flattened out perfectly. So there you go.
A very strange story.
Very strange. I called them too. I said, listen, I don't see a charge on my credit card. What's it? Well, let's see. He went through the whole thing. He says, yeah, no charge. I said, okay.
After the water damage thing?
After the water damage, after the basic that I agreed to pay $199 for the fix of the battery, there was no charge for anything. There you go. Thumbs up.
Maybe it was something that they had to fix because of some recall or something along those lines, and they fixed it. And then they decided, well, maybe after fixing it, we can gouge this guy.
Let's
just tell him that he's going to have to pay $750 or something like that for water damage and see if he bites.
Oh, you're saying
he didn't. He didn't bite. Like, okay, we'll just send him.
Just send it to him. But they could have charged me the $199. I would have agreed to that. I did agree to that. That was my original agreement. But anyway, I'm pretty happy about that. The second one was I broke that rod in two, bottom fishing for swordfish. The rod snapped in half. So I boxed it up. I sent it to Shimano with their warranty, and it was definitely out of warranty. They get it. They call me tonight. They say, hey, listen, this is out of warranty. However, we see that you really kept the rod in great condition. I've seen these rods come back. They're horrible. This rod is in great condition. And you know what? I see the trouble you had here. I have some, what do you call it? Safety stock, he calls it. I have some safety stock. I'm going to send you a new rod for free. I'm like, okay.
You're just the luckiest guy except for South Africa.
This is two out of the three major customer service issues. I have one more. I still have my Comcast issue, but okay. But two of the four are resolved. It's all because of Twitter.
What is the Comcast issue?
I get these intermittent dropouts during the day. Well, anytime, where my trading software... Actually, it's my whole internet just goes off for a second and comes right back.
Yeah, this happened to me.
And we've gone through it. I got rid of their modem and router.
You're just wasting your time. It's the wire. Some squirrel got to it.
Well, they're supposed to come out today again. They've been out here like five or six times.
Yeah, they come out and they come out and they come out, but they never go and look at the wire. Right. When they finally look at the wire, they'll find the problem.
Yeah, so hopefully they're going to do that next because I've done everything on my end on the inside of the building that I can do, right? But yeah. So anyway. All right, what else do we got here? Let me give you a quick market update of what's going on here. Breach of the 3,000-point level for the S&P 500 and the 27,000 level for the Dow Jones Industrial Average happened last week. We saw in economics, retail sales up 0.4% versus the 0.2% expected. That's going along with the fact that we have a good wealth effect and the confidence is up and markets and everybody's happy, so they're buying. Import and export prices came out today, and it was pretty much dropping off a cliff. We saw a 0.7% decline in export prices, a 0.9% decline in import prices. And the import prices retreated more and they came down further, which is good for profitability. So that's good because you have a lower cost of the goods that you get and you still could charge a little bit more, or even though it's down a bit, it's the ratio or the margin is a little bit better. So the only problem with this is it does indicate a deflationary trend.
Which they hate.
Right, yeah. So that's something. We saw June industrial production came in at 0.0% versus a plus 2% consensus estimate. And capacity utilization was at 77.9 versus 78.2. Subtle changes, slight drops, but along with the idea that manufacturing is slowing down, and we're seeing that factory orders are slowing down, and that's a problem for GDP moving forward and for growth of the economy.
Okay.
We have earnings season that just started this week. Earnings season. We have the, remember it used to be that Alcoa was the bell ringer.
Old Alcoa.
Yep, Alcoa was the bell ringer for, hey, earnings season is here. When Alcoa reported, it's official. No longer is Alcoa important, and we're going with the financials. So we saw JP Morgan, Citigroup, we saw Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo. So JP Morgan beat by 33 cents per share on earnings. It beat on revenues. Their net income was better than expected. Their loan growth dropped about 2% year on year. Now, here's the important thing that we saw from several of these financials. Their net interest margin, which is a measure of the difference between the interest income that they get and the money they pay out. So it's that, they take in money at one rate, they pay out money on another rate on savings. And this is because of the inverted yield curve, it slipped 7 basis points. Mm. Eight basis points on a quarter of a quarter. So this is a trend that you see, and net interest margin is the most important thing when it comes to quote unquote banking. Now, there's other aspects of these companies, right? They have equity issues, they have IPOs and investment banking that they do. They have bond issues and underwritings and all that, plus all sorts of stock trading and all that. But from a bank standpoint, from an absolute pure bank standpoint, the net interest margin is probably the most important thing. So we're seeing that this is a pattern with the banks right now.
Okay.
Now, you have been mentioning and talking about trains, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you had said that the rails, the anecdotal evidence, the Dvorak indicator of transportation and trains was a little bit lighter recently, right? Isn't that what you said?
Well, it's a little bit lighter. Not a lot. But there are some holding tracks holding a bunch of cars not moving, and they've been there for a while, and in fact they've been there for a long while. But it tends to be it's not the old indicator that I recall from a long time ago, where there was they used to be holding box cars. But no, these are all mineral cars, like coal cars and cars that carry rocks. I don't know, whatever they put in them.
Well, CSX, the train carrier, came out with earnings tonight, and they lowered their fiscal year revenue growth guidance to 1.2% decline from single-digit growth. They reaffirmed a lot of their operating ratio guidance and a few other things. They've lowered their overall guidance, though, and they're looking at about $12 billion to $12.13 billion versus $12.47 billion. And they expected the fiscal 19 revenue to grow by single digits. Stocks down 6% after hours.
Huh. Well, I guess I was right.
Yeah. We'll see a few more coming out soon. But the transportation obviously makes some sense if there was this big rush to get products, and now all of a sudden that has slowed down for one reason
or the other. That would make sense. That's what your theory was.
In the uniforms business, this is a fascinating company because I remember back in 2007, or maybe it was 6-7, when unemployment started really rising very rapidly, right? Remember that time? And we saw that, you know, negative 100, negative 200, negative 5. I think it was a negative 800,000 print at 1 month. Remember that?
Yep.
And I said, well, what companies would get hurt by this? Well, aside from every company, okay? Well, what companies would be the supplier, and you could do kind of a head count of who there are working for them, and then what would be directly related, you know, correlate perfectly to, okay, if there's a lower head count, there's a lower revenue, lower sales. And the company that I came up with at that time was Cintas.
I remember this.
Yeah, way back when. And Cintas did come down very significantly. I think it was down to like $12 a share. I think now it's like $250 a share, because obviously the opposite is happening. This is a company that if you see somebody kind of wearing one of those blue uniforms, like janitorial supply uniforms, or, you know, any other workers, oftentimes, or even restaurants, oftentimes they get it from Cintas because Cintas will create the uniform for you and then you just ship it back. They wash it and give it back to you and then give you your supply back.
Huh.
So the company came in and beat again by 14 cents. And it reported revenues in line, guides fiscal 2020 in line, although the midline they raised a little bit. So the mid-level of what they expected, they raised a little bit. And revenues rose 7.4% year over year, which again correlates really well with the fact that we have more people working, more people on the job. So they pretty much kept most of their numbers, but raised and did a little tweaking of their numbers, and the stock was up 6% after hours. It could be an all-time high. Somebody should check that. CTAS is the symbol. Pretty cool. Now, remember this for when we start to see employment one day tail off. Because this will be a great short.
Cintas?
Yeah. But we have to get to where there's a leveling off of employment, no longer any jobs gains, and even a negative print.
Yeah.
And if that trend
that
goes,
wild.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, keep it in mind. Stick it in the back of the head there somewhere. I got a chart here on the manufacturing and service activity, and clearly we're seeing that this is weakening further. So there's a blended composite, which consists of 30% manufacturing and 70% of the services index. And you can see that since July of 2018, where it pretty much peaked out, it's been coming down ever so slowly. It's still not in contraction zone. We're about 53.5 on it right now. But you can see
I said 50 to be in contraction.
Yeah, under 50 we contraction. And this is the composite that we created. Usually you look at
it's a good. This is a nice chart. This hasn't contracted since. With some charts like this, I wish you had longer.
2008, there was probably one little dip in 2011. I could pull that up next time.
Yeah.
But it's been in.
What is it telling me?
It dipped down a little bit. When was that? In June of 2016. What it tells you is that we are seeing a slowdown in the economy from where we were. So I don't know if it was overheated when it was above the 60 range, but we're starting to see a trend. It's clearly a trend, right? If we're seeing it from July 2018 to now, it's a year. We're starting to see a trend of lower lows and moving directionally towards that contraction zone. And if we see that there is a contraction in this area, so this is important because this is pretty much our whole economy. The service sector is the majority of our economy these days, whereas we used to be more manufacturing. But if we see this turning and starting to get lower towards the 50, that's a really bad sign for the economy.
Well, we haven't seen that since the chart doesn't show it at all happening. So it has to have happened in the past. It happened in 2011, you said?
I think there was a dip down in 2011 when we had that little period of soft patch in the economy.
But obviously it went below it on 2007 and 8.
Yes, clearly. It was way down.
Okay.
And this is nice. And this, again, this is weighted more to the services, which is usually a higher number. Manufacturing will usually slow down more than services.
Okay.
What else we got? The Citigroup Economic Index.
This is a nice chart, by the way. People should look at it.
Yeah, this is over on DH Unplugged. You find it on the show notes for episode number 465. 465. The next one is the City Eco Surprise Index. Now, this
This is something we discussed a long time ago, and I was always fascinated by it, and then I forgot all about it. You haven't brought this into play for a while.
This has been the raw index has been dipping down. And what this means is when you have economic numbers that come out, the reports that come out, how does that compare to where analysts or economists are thinking that the report should be? So if we have that economists say that, you know, XYZ indicator about the economy should be at zero and it comes out at a negative two, well, that's a surprise to the downside. If it comes out plus five, that's a surprise to the upside. And economists usually scramble around to make sure that they're as close to consensus and the real number as possible. So they always are adjusting their numbers closer and closer so they're not wrong, so they don't get fired. That's what they do. So
yeah,
this Citigroup Economic Surprise Index is calculated on a weekly basis, I think it is. But this chart that I put up here is what's important about this is that I added and I put, this is from a report from Yardini, the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index along with the S&P 500 forward PE to show you where the general correlation is. Now, if you look at the PEs, forward PEs, I just want you to start in 2011, and that's the red line.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
The red line has pretty much been going straight up through 2017, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index has been wobbling back and forth.
Well, it's been crossing over and doing this, been doing the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, the dipsy doodle. So, but then I want you to refocus on something. I want you to focus on 2017, where we saw that giant drawdown where economic activity slowed. Economists were caught, shorthanded, if you will, on where things were going. They were very positive. And the economic indicators came down. But look what happened there. Usually you see a little bit of a lag in markets in terms of the valuations and therefore the PE valuations. Markets getting ahead of themselves. And they'll usually, oftentimes they'll somewhat track with a little bit of a lag the surprise index. Because now what you're finding is that economists are wrong. The economy is either slowing or growing faster than anticipated, and that will be a good signal for stocks. But what happened in 2017 is we saw this giant drop-off, and then you look at the PEs, it kept on rising like nobody cared. Nobody had a care in the world. If you look back to 2007, 2008, all the way through, it was kind of correlated, the ups and downs, to a degree. But we still see the PEs expanding through 2017 into 2018. And then all of a sudden, we peaked out again. It drew right back up. We had this big V in 2017 to 2018. Obviously, things picked up with the tax deal and with all the things that, you know, the reduction in regulations, all the things that really pumped up the stock market. But then we saw this big drop into 2018 of PE ratios. Came down towards the end of 2018. That correlated again. You see that, right? That kind of worked.
That's right on the money.
But now what we have is a rollover since the end of 2018 into 2019. We're in the negative zone. I think it's a negative 0.45 as of 7:15 on the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index. Yet PEs are still expanding and peaking out. This is one of the greatest.
It has to fall at any minute.
Something's got to give here. Either the economics going to pick up dramatically and then solve this problem, or PE ratios are going to start coming back down, which means that stocks will fall, or earnings are going to pick up dramatically and stocks won't go up, either one.
Well, we don't think that's going to happen.
No. Again, this is the PE ratios, not the actual price of the S&P. But usually you would think that when the economy is really good and there's a lot of optimism, that it's okay and the green light to buy stocks at higher prices. And this is really being moved by the idea that rates are going down and nobody cares about the economics. In other words, the data doesn't matter. And that doesn't usually stay that way for too long.
No.
And once you start hearing that on TV, when you hear, keep your ears open, the data doesn't matter, not on a podcast, but on TV, start running for the hills. Because our next...
This is another good chart people should definitely check out.
Yep. Over on dhunplugged.com. Here's another one. We have a chart with this also. This is a chart fest today. I think this is fascinating. We know the stock market has been hitting record highs almost on a daily basis recently. However, two things to consider. U.S.-based money market funds attracted about $28 billion in the week ending last Wednesday, the largest weekly inflow since mid-May, as the S&P index rose above 3,000 for the first time. So there's a little bit of a, let me get this straight. Money's moving into money markets. Where's it coming from? Well, let's continue on. Equity funds, mutual funds, and ETFs. U.S. investors pulled out the largest net amount of assets from mutual funds and exchange-traded funds that hold domestic stocks in more than 5 years last week, even as the U.S. equity markets hit a record high. They pulled out $25 billion in net outflows from the ETFs and mutual funds, the largest that we saw since February 2014. Over the last 2 weeks, investors have pulled out approximately $30 billion from U.S. stock funds. Here's the question. Get set. How in the world does this square up with the market moving to all-time highs?
It doesn't.
Where is the logic here and where is the money coming from? Because you have to get money into stocks for them to move higher. That is logical, right?
Well, can people be taking it out of this and putting it straight into the stock market?
That is possible. So that's one possibility. The possibility is restated. They're taking it out. Well, they're also putting it into money market funds, but let's put that aside. They're taking money out of mutual funds. They're taking money out of ETFs, and they're putting it into individual stocks directly. They're buying Microsoft, Netflix, Pfizer, Bristol, DuPont, whatever
getting
it is.
Their own little... Yeah. Creating a portfolio.
Highly unlikely.
Why?
Because a lot of money's going into the money markets, almost an exact amount that's being pulled out of U.S. equity mutual funds and ETFs are going into money market funds. Mm. If they are buying individual stocks, where's the money coming from and why all of a sudden are they dumping it into money market mutual funds? That makes no sense. It's coming out of somewhere magically. It's coming, they're like, it's time to take it out of the bank and put it into a money market mutual fund for I don't know what reason. So here's a chart, and then I'm going to give you the answer here. Here's a chart showing the actual weekly net cash flow of equity mutual funds. And you can see that on 7/13, we peaked out there. Now, there's been actual outflows. This is the fascinating part. There's been major outflows for, 4 years, 3 years, and the outflows seem to be getting greater and greater. Do you see that?
Well, it starts in, to me, it starts in 2013, 2014, and it just pretty much gets worse.
So either one of two things, either.
And so also it has to be looked at with the 2008 outflow too, which is like, holy mackerel.
That was $35 billion. We had $30 billion. That was out at the end of 2018.
Yeah.
So there's a sustained outflow. I think we could agree to this. Generally speaking, a couple of little bumps here or there, right? But nothing major, only $5 billion in, $2 billion in. There's been a sustained outflow. Where is the money coming from to buy stocks and to raise the stock market to all-time highs? The answer's there. The answer's here. You know the answer.
What do you think?
You know the answer. It's buybacks. It's share repurchase programs that are being run on a regular basis by companies that have either borrowed money and or have gotten benefits from taxes and are taking it and returning it to shareholders in the form of dividends and share buybacks. That's the only logical thing.
No, that's exactly it. What else could it be?
I'm mystified.
So this is a disaster.
Well, then the next question is, somebody wrote on Twitter, a good friend of mine, Frank Curzio, he wrote, hey, Citigroup's earnings may not have been that good, but here's you need to realize something. Over the next year, they're going to buy back about 10% of the company. 10% of the company. And blah, 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 blah. That will raise your earnings up to this point, whatever. And I wrote him back and said, hey, hold on for a second. Share buybacks are a temporary fix that are basically financial engineering that are not long-term beneficial, organic, or holistic earnings. They are
in fact, worse than that, it tends to be a mechanism that we always kind of dismiss as a bad idea, which is buy high and sell low.
Yeah.
You're always buying high.
Right.
Anyway, go on. Sorry.
That's okay. So, okay. What was the other point here? Oh, so my point is that, you know, when you ask the question, how long can this last, right? That's the question. And I don't really see an end in sight to this as long as we have a low interest rate environment with a super a stimulative market with or Fed with a desire to continue to add liquidity to the systems and pump the product, if you will. So...
Well, how long could it go on?
I don't know. I mean,
if you're looking at this, it's been going on since it started when there was a lot of money inflow in 2013, which continued to 2014. Then the outflow began around 2014 on this chart. After a whole, 2008 all the way to 2013, it was like outflow, and then all of a sudden it went the other way. It's a very interesting chart. I don't know what to make of it.
But I think that we have to realize, especially when you look at the footprint in the market, especially when there's low volume and there's nothing going on and the stocks that are actually moving things and how they move it, where there's a consistent, you know, the markets come down at the morning in the pre-markets because of, some reason. And they start just creeping up all day because the programs are just constantly pushing money into the stocks. And there is no... There is no. What do you have there? Corn chips?
No, I had a bag. I wanted to move it to someplace that wasn't in my way.
But you have these companies that are consistently buying back, regardless of valuations. It doesn't matter why, because the people that are putting these buybacks into place are the management who are basically getting a lot of stock out of the company and want to have high prices in order to sell their deals.
Yes.
So the question
benefits them.
The question from the chat room is, does this mean that the smart money is leaving the market? It just means that money is leaving the market. I don't know if it's the smart money or it's they never talk about the stupid money, but the unsmart money. I don't know. It's just that there is.
It's called dumb money.
Dumb money. Yeah. Dumb money. It is just money is leaving the market. People are saying, you know what? I'm taking my money and leaving. And then maybe this is also where there is ammunition. There is dry powder sitting on the sidelines in the form of cash and money market that when you see really good news, that's why there's so much of a burst in the market. And then, you know, a consistency of just low volatility because the money that's coming out of the market is being matched with money in by these share buybacks. It's a fascinating situation. I can't wait for 20 years from now when I get to look back on this. I need a cough.
There'll only be two shares being traded.
Yeah. I need a lozenger. A lozenge.
This is the beginning of some end.
Yep.
Everything needs to be privately owned.
Exactly. Eventually, what is the end game? The end game is all these companies are going to go private.
Yeah.
So, Zoom Media. Have you been following this story about Zoom Media?
No, I have not.
Do you know what Zoom Media is?
I don't know that I do. I know about the company that makes the Zoom products.
So Zoom is essentially a WebEx or a GoToMeeting.
Okay, this is a different company.
They came public recently. I started using them because I checked out all the other products. This pricing was good. We could do webinars with it. They have a really interesting optimization of video streams and audio. For example, if Skype ever goes to the wayside, I heard today from my Microsoft expert that Skype is being,
Phased out.
Depreciated, yeah. And it's going to be along with Microsoft Teams. There'll be something in Teams that you can use, and it will be free to use. You could buy it on the corporate side, or you can free to use it if you are a non-subscriber, kind of like Skype is free. But I heard that they are starting to phase that out. Zoom Media has a pretty good conferencing system. It's very similar to all the other ones. But here's a couple of things. The last couple of weeks, there's been some very fascinating discussion about something that's going on. They install, like all of them, kind of a back-end server so that when you launch the product, it will open up. It will allow you to share screens and share your audio, share your video, and all that good stuff, whiteboards, all that. Well, there was a security researcher, Karen Lyons, published this evidence that the video conferencing apps could maliciously be opened and cameras turned on due to a security flaw, specifically with Macs. Now, this time, this is going on in the background with Zoom. There was supposedly a six-month investigation. Zoom is denying it. No, no, no. But the truth is, if you put, for example, the address of a meeting in like an iframe, and you told somebody to go to that website, the iframe kind of opens up, if you will, right? It automatically opens that link. And that link would open up your camera and start a meeting so somebody could spy on you. I don't know why somebody wants to do this, but okay. Well, there was a back-end server that even if you don't use Zoom and you close it down and you uninstall it, there's a kind of a server that sits in the back-end anyway on Macs. And someone who didn't have the installation anymore couldn't go back and get the upgrade to it in order to fix it. So Apple came out with a fix to close up the security flaw. And it's going to come down as a silent upgrade in the back of your Mac. Well, all of a sudden, they're looking at this whole thing, and now it seems that RingCentral and a Chinese app called Zumu is also susceptible to this malicious situation, and where this code can be embedded in an iframe to automatically open up a video conference that turns your webcam on, and they both use Zoom technology behind the scenes. I didn't realize RingCentral did. So anybody that is utilizing any of this teleconferencing on a Mac needs to make sure that they get these updates and upgrades, because you could have somebody peeping Tom on you as you are picking your nose or watching TV or getting dressed.
Or who knows what. That's why I always say, put a piece of gaffer's tape over your camera.
Right. Yep. From the files of Nothing Will Ever Change, got to dig deep in there and then you find just a whole host of things. You remember last week when Deutsche Bank is going to be firing one out of every five people through a massive restructuring and all this, take a big $7.5 billion charge, create a bad bank. Yeah, there's all this stuff going on. Well, it seems that the CEO, Christian Suing, which is kind of a interesting name for a CEO of a company, Suing.
Well, it actually looks like sewing to me, but okay.
Christian Suing. Says he's reprimanded executives for having expensive custom suits tailored on the day that the mass layoffs hit the troubled bank's offices in London, New York, and Tokyo. Two tailors were photographed coming out of the German bank's London office on Monday, and they were at Deutsche Bank's London office to fit $1,800 suits for senior staff who were not hit by the job cuts. How do you like that? So if you think
we didn't get fired, I'm getting a suit.
There's more money available. You know, if you think that Deutsche Bank is going to change the way of their doing things, which has been a deep history of manipulation of stock prices, of different indices, of ripping off clients, of money laundering. This, I don't know, whatever the whole list is that they have. Yeah, and you think that all of a sudden they're going to change? I don't think so.
Why should they change?
They're not going to change. Global trade war is hitting Asia right in the zone for this whole trade war. Singapore's economy shrank in the second quarter from the previous 3 months on an annualized basis. Missing forecast, the GDP fell 3.4% in the April to June period. That's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
And then today hitting markets was, there's a parade of Fed speakers this week. Well, you know, we shouldn't raise rates, cut rates that much. Oh, we're going to, you know, we have to do that. Constant, okay? President Trump mentioned that the trade negotiations with China was going to take a long time to resolve.
Yeah, he's hoping it takes about 6 years.
Exactly 6 years.
Yeah.
Unless he's going to try to change the Constitution, which I wouldn't think best. Did you hear these stories about all these Democrats that are really concerned about how if Trump loses the election that he won't leave office?
Yeah, this was the same. I had my next door neighbor went off on this, and I said, you know, this is – gee, let me think. I've heard this about Bush.
Yep.
I've heard it about Reagan.
Right.
Clinton was going to be to go for a third term. Obama was going to become – he was going to be emperor. He's going to be king. These guys are glad to get out of this office.
After 8 years, it's enough. It's enough.
Well, they've already – their hair's turned white.
Yeah.
Look like crap.
Mm-hmm. So you can donate to the show, by the way, folks, if you are enjoying any of the repartee or if you have any interest in making sure that we continue for eons. You can very simply go over to DH Unplugged, click on the donate button, and every little bit helps. And thank you, everyone who does on a regular basis, on a monthly, weekly. They do have that opportunity to subscribe, if you will, through PayPal and send in a donation. Thank you very much for all of your support. For those of you that haven't, here's your opportunity to go over there and feel good about helping out the show. It is a, I find it. Aside from my discussions and John's discussions with me and this back and forth we do, the audience is a big part of this. So be a part of it. Be a part of the supporting of it. We have the Bank of America close to the pin going on. So that's will be finalized.
You got my thing, right?
Yep, I did. It will be finalized at the end of the week. Okay, a couple of nutty stories here, or some nutty stories. There is a new, supposedly gag. We'll see. But storming the gates at Area 51.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
More than 540,000 people from around the world have signed up to attend the joke Facebook event, Storm Area 51. They can't stop all of us. And a lot more said they're interested in going. Planned for September 20th in Amargosa Valley, an hour's drive from L.A. Oh, excuse me, an hour's drive from Las Vegas. The event is filled with thousands of satirical posts and meme theorizing the best way to break into the top secret facility. We should do a remote.
Yeah.
We should, yeah. And do, come on, we'd get some great interviews.
We're here at Area 51. Andrew, what do you see at your side?
Yeah. I see a lot of people ripping off their shirts, trying to make a go of it. You know, that's what it's going to be. It's going to like people just like with I see a lot of people with really long hair that's standing up. Can you see that? You know what I'm talking about? It's just the and people like ripping off their shirts and wearing like blue jeans with holes in it and Keds. I don't know why. I see this vision.
Keds.
I see this vision.
Do they still make Keds?
Yeah. And everybody kind of like gathering around and looking like they do something, but nobody does anything.
No, of course not.
They stand and talk about it, that we have the right to know. Are there other life forms in the universe? And do you have, I mean, everybody's probably thinking there's a flying saucer of some sort. I'm not going to mention a name, but I was at an event this weekend and somebody blurted out, I'm not kidding either, that he said, yeah, I recently saw a UFO. I'm like, what? And, he's telling me about it. I'm like, oh. This is also the same person that I know that doesn't swim because he has a fear of water because in a past life he was on the Titanic. I'm just saying.
Oh, brother. Okay.
And that's close to that. By the way, that's close to who the person is.
That's what you, yeah, the guy you described with the long hair and the shirtless yeah. is that guy.
Yep. Scooters. You know, scooters are a big problem. It seems a YouTube star's death on an electric scooter may renew safety concerns like they were ever... Not there. as scooter companies aggressively seek to expand their presence as an alternative transportation. Emily Hartridge, she was a television presenter who made videos about fitness and mental health, died after her scooter was hit by a truck in London, making her the first such fatality in Britain.
Very well, sad. So much for fitness.
Yep. Very sad. Those things are very dangerous. There's no question about them. I mean,
you would go to some places where there's lots of, you don't see as many in San Francisco because of the hills. But when I was in Austin.
Right.
You were there.
I was with you. We were in the same car.
Yeah, we're driving around and we've seen these guys zooming around the corner doing about 30.
What's amazing is the amount of scooters in Austin. It's shocking.
Yeah, there's lots.
There's lots of scooters in Austin.
And they go fast. Yep. I mean, some guy on one of those two little wheels, if you're doing over 5 miles an hour,
right.
It doesn't look safe.
Nope. I was on one once, and you just make a little bit of a turn. It has a very tight turning radius because you could turn that front wheel a lot. I mean, you could, it's if you're not on there squarely, you got a problem. The digital currency debate continues. Actually, I'll see where this is right now, but Bitcoin was dropping pretty substantially tonight. Yeah, it's at 94.66. Dropped all the way down from a high about 5 days ago of about 13,005. Came down a little bit, tried to move back up, and right now is at 9,461. And the other cryptocurrencies are getting smoked as well. Ethereum's at 199. Litecoin's at 79. Litecoin recently hit 145 in, let's see, June 17th. Ethereum hit 390 on the 18th and is currently trading at 199. So not for the faint of heart.
No.
Very substantial. Pretty ugly. But a proposal to prevent big technology companies from functioning as financial institutions or issuing digital currencies has been circulating around for discussion by the Democratic majority that leads the House Financial Services Committee. And there's some draft resolution out there. And this is a big issue because of Facebook's Libra digital currency coins, which stopped the whole process.
I already forgot about that.
Yep. They're proposing a bill to propose a fine of $1 million per day for violation of such rules. That doesn't seem like a lot. I mean, Facebook was just hit with $5 billion last week for their lack of oversight and the whole user data issue that they were a part of with the Cambridge Analytics.
Yeah, I wonder who's going to collect this money and where does the money go?
Goes to the government. What, you think you're going to get a piece of that? You think it's going to go?
Of course not, but who's collecting it?
The government.
Well, they just sent them a bill?
Yeah, exactly. They sent a bill to Facebook's mail house, the mail facility. But it's $1 million per day. That's $365 million per year, which, by the way, not that much for Facebook, considering the fact that they could be making more money on the transaction potentially.
Yes, this is true.
So I don't know if that's enough of a fine for them to be too upset about it. I mean, you know, they make it sound like it's a big deal. For a small business, that's a big deal. But the $5 billion, by the way, the $5 billion.
Yeah, for the local dry cleaner, it's a big deal.
The $5 billion settlement that they reached, the stock went up $5. Because it was ridiculous. It wasn't enough. And to close out the show today, close out this part of the show, we have been doing things like limericks in the past. We did odd facts. What did we do? We did, what was it called? We were doing some kind of odd facts, right? For a while.
I can't remember what it was.
It was last week, for goodness sakes. How are you supposed to remember that?
I know, and I don't remember it. It was obviously not memorable.
Strange facts, whatever it is.
Strange, stats or something.
Today I have on this day in 463, it was start of the lunar cycle of Hilarius. I just think that, I don't know what even that means, but I think it's funny. Start of In 1099, the Crusaders herded Jews of Jerusalem into a synagogue and set fire to it. 1940, on this day, Adolf Hitler orders preparations of the invasion of Britain in Operation Sea Lion.
Who comes what up with Crusaders?
What?
In 1099, what Crusaders? I thought the Crusaders were heading down to Mecca to, you know, to attack Muslims.
1099 Crusaders. Let's see. The siege of Jerusalem took place on June 7th to June 15th, 1099 during the First Crusade. The climax of the First Crusade, the successful siege of the Crusaders, took Jerusalem from the Fatimid Caliphates and laid the foundation for the Kingdom of Jerusalem. So you go. Siege of Jerusalem. And then on the final day, they...
It said from a caliphate.
Yeah,
a
caliphate.
Well, that was the other side of the Crusades. It wasn't the Knights Templar Crusaders. It was the Muslims.
It was.
Well, nobody calls them the Crusaders.
I have them here during the First Crusade. What do you call them? It was the Siege of Jerusalem.
Well, you said it was during the First Crusade, but it wasn't the Crusaders were the one side of the fight, and the Caliphate was the other side of the fight. I don't consider them Crusaders. And when you use the word Crusaders around Muslims, they get all bent out of shape.
During the Crusades in 1099, we'll start it again. The Caliphates herded Jews of Jerusalem into a synagogue and set it on fire.
Yeah, during the Crusades.
During the Crusades.
Crusaders.
Okay. So there were no Crusaders during the Crusades.
Yeah, there were Crusaders, but we weren't the guys on the Caliphate side.
Ah.
The Crusades came out of Europe.
Right.
And the Caliphate guys were defending themselves and pushing some Jews around.
Yeah, well, naturally. More Jew stuff. 1940, Adolf Hitler orders preparation of the invasion of Britain. Oh, I said that already. Operation Sea Lion. In 1911, on this day, Ginger Rogers was born.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. In 1999, on this day, American publisher and lawyer John F. Kennedy Jr. was the only son, of course, of U.S. President John F. Kennedy. And First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy died after the airplane he was piloting crashed off Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts and killed were his wife and her sister.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we'll continue with this on this day stuff, but
I hope not.
Looking for content, man, of just to help us out here. So anyway. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned and will disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment along with the performance information from the date discussed as well as any additional important disclosures.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Johnny. Okay. Wow. Double wow. If you haven't seen this list, you need to go over to DH Unplugged under the weekly stock picks and check it out. And again, that's a live ticking, updating regularly during market hours of where the prices have changed since we talked about it. This is pretty. Would you agree?
Yeah, but except for the two dead money, well, actually one of them is down 2%, but the two stocks, one you have, one I have, which are recent, so that was fine. It's all green, and it's green with big numbers, which tells me we're near the beginning of the end.
I mean, we've had the Church and Dwight on here without a 10% dip from February. Kinder Morgan up 9% without a 10% dip since February. Then you got Aerojet Rocketdyne, which, of course, was the company that George Jetson worked for. That's up 35%, hasn't had a major dip. You have, this is unbelievable, Veru. A small penny stock up 49.68% with a 20% stop on it. Not been stopped out yet. That's unbelievable. AES up 8.2, Ford up 3, Summit State up 2, Calavo Grow is up 3.8, Uber is down a little bit, MGM is up 4.5%. BioMarin is a little bit down. Oh, the TBT, my reverse yield reversal play, is up 4.6%. And I have one pick for this week. This is probably the most insane thing ever.
Well, here we go.
Shorting Netflix into earnings.
Yeah, it's a good thing you play that that little clip there, but not advice. I have one.
Okay.
And let me see if I can find it. It's well, I'll tell you what it is. It is Sinclair Broadcasting.
Oh, SNCL? Is that it? No.
I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately. I put it aside and lost it. It's something else. It's SB something, I thought. Anyway, well, you look this ticker up.
SBGI.
Yeah, that's it. Here's the deal. The executive chairman, former president, has been playing his own stock for years. And he's usually buying and selling, and he looks like he's doing okay for himself. And the buying and selling, he said $5, $10, $5, $10. It's up and down and low. The stock is now at $55. And the guy just bought a ton of it. I think $20 million or something along those lines. It was more than the average bear. There's no reason for this, it seems to me, unless something is up. I suspect they're in play to be bought out. Even though they've been doing the buying. Either that or diversifying. I don't know. Something is amiss with this stock insofar as – not amiss with the stock. The stock's fine. Something amiss with this guy's – this guy's always – he just bought – there's no reason for him to not already be in this much, but he's just bought – he bought way in. He went way in. Just very suspicious. So let's play along.
Okay, we got it in. And so it's insiders. And yes. Normal stop, it's what trading at $58, 58 and a half it's trading at. So this is a JCD pick. Enter. It's going to highlight it correctly so we know whose is whose in here. And yeah, folks, this what's really cool about it is it updates on the web all the time. So it's kind of interesting to watch this. I think otherwise I am pretty much out of material.
Are you? When do you leave for South Africa?
Pretty much August 1st.
Oh, okay.
So flying Virgin upper class to London. Got about an 8-hour layover in London, which will be nice. Have a little lunch and maybe a little hot toddy or tea. And then head over. I got to pick up somebody. A friend told me they have Viagra over the counter there. And he wants me to pick up a bunch for him. I'm like, okay.
God.
So, well.
Wait till TSA. Hey, Bill, what is this? What is this? Does you think this is the real Viagra this guy's bringing through? Yeah. You know these guys.
So. Yep.
They have a sense of humor.
Yep. So, and no, it's not Adam, by the way. yeah, he asked me to pick it up for him. So I'm going to leave about on August 1st. I got about 5 days in wine country and about 5 days on safari.
Sounds good.
So hopefully that will be a lot of fun. I will see you again next week.
All right. See you then. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.